Cheerscast is part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Sam, we have a problem.
You know, I gotta be honest with you, John. The way you pronounce my name really bugs me.
How would you like me to pronounce it?
Sam. Just Sam. You try.
Sam.
All right, John. What would you say if you're gonna order a ham sandwich?
I don't eat ham.
Everybody knows your name.
Hello and welcome back to Cheerscast, a podcast where everybody knows your name. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and with us this time is returning guest from the Quantum Leap podcast. Please welcome back Peter Vonasek. What's up, Peter?
Hey, Ryan. You got the name down as you've been practicing all morning. So thank you for having me back. It's great to be back. I've made a Facebook friend since was last on the podcast. Shout outs to Rick.
Yeah.
My office, I'm a letter carrier, if nobody caught it the first time around, but my office delivers to Rick. So we, and I believe my route's not too far away from him too. So small world.
Yeah. You know what? Cheerscast is a matchmaker. We bring fans together.
Yeah. And you absolutely do. Yeah. Been enjoying the coverage and can't believe we're in season 10 now.
I can hardly believe that myself, but we're at season 10, episode 9, almost in double digits, and this is the episode Head Over Hill, this one written by Dan Staley and Rob Long, directed by not James Burrows, this one was directed by John Ratzenberger, the actor who plays Cliff himself. This is actually the second out of four episodes that he directs in the entire series. The first one was back in season 6, and then the last two are in the final season. The original air date for this one was Thursday, November 14th, 1991. Sam's nemesis, John Allen Hill, is fed up with Cheers using Melville's dumpsters, so he puts padlocks on them. Sam has never successfully retaliated against John before, so he outsources his revenge to Carla, who storms upstairs on a mission to make John cry. Later, a distraught Carla races into the bathroom where she confesses to Rebecca and Lilith that she didn't attack John, she had sex with him. When Sam finds out, he feels betrayed by his oldest friend and unloads on her. Later that night, he goes to Carla's house to apologize for how he reacted. She apologizes, too, for losing control and sleeping with John, and for doing it again as Sam finds John wearing Carla's bathrobe. Meanwhile, Cliff gets to reenact the first mail delivery in Boston, which involves riding a horse. It doesn't go great.
No, it doesn't.
All right, Peter, what did you think about this one?
This episode is great. It so much is going on, and shout outs to John Ratzenberger, who he balanced every character so well. Everybody has something to do. Woody has great moments. I guess Rebecca probably has the least to do in the episode, but she has a great moment as well. And it's just a team effort. Carla's got some good stuff, even the Frasers, really good stuff. They're the Cranes, rather, the Frasers. I'm sorry. Yeah, the Cranes, some good things there. The first time I watched it, I think too much was going on for me. I was a little overwhelmed. Yeah, and then on the second rewatch, I picked up more things. And then I think the third time around, since I knew kind of where everybody was going to be and knew what was coming, I was able to kind of absorb it a little bit more and take it in. I thought it was a fantastic episode. I thought it was hilarious. A really great setup. One of the jokes here that I like don't want to tip my hand too far in advance here. And I guess I was wondering, John Allen Hill, I think it's interesting that we get his full name. And usually when you hear something like that, you think of true crime and these serial killers where we know their full names of John Wayne Gacy and stuff like this, so we've already known some serial killers. I wonder if there's something to that and the idea behind giving us his full name.
Maybe there's just something that seems formal about it, overly kind of formal in the way he carries his bearing. He's very stuffy and elitist, and it just seems a little bit sort of old world formality about that. As the villain, certainly I wouldn't have drawn the John Wayne Gacy comparison, but now that it's there, I'm like, well, that would have been in the zeitgeist at the time.
Yeah. And, you know, like, I know the actor, I don't have his name offhand, but, like, I also knew him from, like, the one episode on Full House where he was there to, like, buy the house. And I just remember his exchange with, like, Kimmy Gibbler, you know, because she keeps, like, popping up in the episode. He's like, you know, who are you? And she's like, I'm the next door neighbor. It's he's just great wherever he is. I do fancy him as kind of like the villain, you know, at the time. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a simple episode is kind of like what I came around. Like what, by the time it ended, I was like, that felt very light. Like, I don't want to say nothing happened, but it just felt like it moved faster. And by the time it was over, I was like, that was enjoyable, but I don't know. It didn't seem like there weren't as many hooks. There weren't as many heavy punches, but everything kind of just moved quickly at a good pace. I do think it's interesting that, you know, in the episode John Ratzenberger directed, he was, you know, he could have been like, instead of putting on that mail carrier uniform, give me civilians. I just want to be comfortable in the few scenes that I'm in. It's like, nope, he went the exact opposite. But in the teaser for this episode, there's like Woody's, Norm is there. There's a call to the bar and Woody picks up the phone. And there's like a nice little unspoken moment where when Woody's getting the phone, Norm just kind of brushes his hands like silently, like, I'm not here. And then Woody picks up the phone and he's just hearing half the conversation. But he's like, yes, hang on, I'll check. And he goes over to the refrigerator. Yep, the refrigerator is running. Thanks for calling. Thanks for checking with us. Okay, yeah, I remember this prank call when I was in, you know, fourth or fifth grade or something.
Sure. Then, but, I almost wonder if it's like something we've even heard on like The Simpsons. You know, like it's like one of the most phone prank calls like ever. And you mentioned the whole Norm thing. I'm just like, oh, is this like a moment where Vera calls and like Woody just screws up the whole, you know, oh, hold on, let me check with Mr. Peterson if he's actually still here. But yeah, it's a great gag, and I think what makes it even funnier is just how it continues on and just goes over Woody's head.
Right, exactly, because we don't hear the punchline to the joke, which is if your refrigerator's running, you better go catch it, or some, you know, variation of that. But because it's Woody, it doesn't matter, because that's not the funny part. Because Woody hears that and he goes, no, the refrigerator can't move on its own. It doesn't have, and then you just hear him keep going into this conversation. Like, I get what you're saying, but in this case, the word running can only mean working. And then to have Woody say this, he's like, it's what we call a homonym. It's like, yeah, Woody, the master of grammar.
It's so good, so well written, so well delivered. And also Woody Harrelson, you know, plays it so well where he's just like, I have to explain this to this idiot who's calling me.
He's apologetic about it too. Like,
yeah, right. Yeah, just the movement part. Just like, well, you said running, so that implies, or however he says it. Yeah, it's really good. It's probably, in terms of like an opener, like it's one that's like really hilarious. Yeah, a memorable one for sure.
Because Woody hangs up and he's just like, boy, Mr. Peterson, some people. And he's kind of shaking his head at it. And a few feet away, we find out that Frasier and Lilith were on the phone. They hang up and Lilith was the one making the prank call. And Frasier was like kind of coaxing her, walking her through it. And he's like, no, you explained the joke. That ruins it.
There's so much going on right there because Lilith is like holding a handkerchief. You know, I think it's easy to assume that like, oh, she's covering the receiver. Or, well, it's been a while since I don't know which part is which, but the speaking part of the handset, she's covering it to disguise her voice, I'd imagine. But yeah. I also think like, oh, well, you know, it's Lilith. Maybe she's also using the handkerchief to hold the, you know, like the phone so she doesn't get her hands dirty. But how did we get there? What was, you know, that's, if that's B, what's A? You know, were they sitting at the bars like, you know, honey, let's prank Woody, you know, like this is a funny joke.
Is this something that they do on their free time? But it's, I also had this whole scene in my mind where it's like something came up where like she felt challenged. She felt like somebody said like she couldn't indulge in this kind of humor. And she was like, yeah, she was going to prove them wrong. Or maybe it was like a debate, like a bet with Frasier that she couldn't do this. And they're kind of going through the process together. I don't know.
That's it right there. They had like a minor debate on who's funnier, you know. And she's right. Like, watch, I have this great joke, you know, or prank. We're going to call Woody, you know. Yeah, I like that.
When we come back from the credits, Frasier's at the other side of the bar reading the newspaper, and Woody asks if he can have the paper when he's done. And Frasier's like, you know, well, I actually want to keep this because there's an article about buying diamonds, about like the ins and outs of diamonds or the pros and cons. And he's like, he wants to keep the article because he's thinking about getting a gift for Lilith. And Woody's like, oh, okay, I understand. I just wanted to clip the coupons in the paper because I'm trying to make it to my next paycheck. And Frasier, he's like, all right, he feels bad enough. He's like, okay, I'm sorry. He gives him the paper, and he's like, you know, we're making economic concessions too. You know, it's hard times even for, you know, successful psychiatrists. I decided not to buy that new BMW that I was looking at. He's like, what are you getting the coupons for? And Woody just goes, food.
Yeah, it's a great moment. And I know the people at home, you know, they only listen to this. They don't really see us. But I'm tearing up because this stuff is so funny. And I think everyone is so well. But this moment right here, like I have like one note. I typed poor Woody. And I mean that in two ways. Like he's literally poor. Well, first off, I'm sure they're not on the same page, you know, like, right. Yeah, just the idea of like, you know, Woody's just trying to save money so he can purchase food. And, you know, Frasier's just like, oh, yeah, we're not going to buy that BMW, which also brought, you know, kind of reminded me of the time where he almost took over like Rebecca's, you know, BMW as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
and I don't remember if he did he end up taking over the payments?
They did. They by the end of that joke, it was, yeah, he bought it. Like, or they said it was sold. We don't know where that ended up going.
Right. So I wonder if that would have been like car number two, you know, so it's like, okay, well, maybe we're fine still with just the one car that we took from Rebecca. Or maybe that was the second car that they purchased and they don't need a third one. Right.
And Woody, Frasier, I'm sure, you know, thinks of himself maybe as a populist, despite not being one at all, but kind of like thinking of himself maybe as like a peer of Woody, like they're on the same standing. He's like, oh, yeah, Woody's hurting for money. I get it. I'm hurting for money, too. You know, we can't buy the fancy new elite car, but Woody's starving. And that's when Frasier's just like, you know what? I'm going to talk to somebody else now. He's like, I'm going to go sit somewhere else.
Good on Frasier for being able to read the room. Not starving, literally quite like Woody. And you know, like the joke, you know, has to work, and it is hilarious. But I was wondering, I was like, Woody works as much as anybody else in that bar, like Carla. I'm just like, is he hurting that bad? You know, but maybe his money is going elsewhere, and we're just not privy to it.
Then Cliff enters, and he enters with a top of the morning to ye. And if that wasn't different enough, he's not, as I mentioned earlier, he's not wearing his postal uniform. He is dressed in a fully like colonial era, like a long coat. He's wearing pantaloons. He's got the tri-corner hat. And the weirdest thing is, like, I think what struck me more than just the outfit is that the color, it's like this peach, almost non-color thing. Like, what did you think about his outfit when you saw him walk in?
I think I might have had read the description of the episode, maybe, because I believe I knew that, you know, I knew kind of like what he was going to be doing in this episode. And when he showed up, I was like, what is that? And I actually have a page up right now that shows like the evolution of the U.S. Post Office uniforms. And, you know, a lot of these are like in sepia, you know, and black and white, so it's hard to tell, but I don't think it's ever been anything than like any other like version of blue. It's funny to think like maybe like Cliff got it on his own and maybe the sepia colors threw him off and he just thought it was that color, right. But it's, I mean, he does make a comment that, you know, he had been selected, and so I don't know. Did he get the uniform? Did he choose the uniform? Did they supply it? It seems like if it's something that they supplied, this is something that should be like in a Smithsonian, you know, museum. So like, I do feel maybe Cliff got it on his own and couldn't find the right, like, I have questions, Ryan. It's god awful, but it is funny.
I was like, he had to have picked this out himself, and either he went cheap in confidence or genuinely thought that was the best, most lavish, you know, like looking thing. And he asks Norm, he's like, what does he think about this outfit? And Norm is just, Cliff, you're my friend. I haven't judged you in the past, and I'm not going to judge you now. this is where he explains he's been given the honor of reenacting the first mail delivery in Boston. He gives the locations, the actual addresses. I didn't write those down. I don't remember, but he's basically going to reenact the last leg of the journey, which involves him riding a horse. That's why I'm dressed up this way. And Carla's like, what way? And he's like, right. This crazy looking outfit. And she goes, boy, are you splitting hairs.
Yeah, it was a great line. What way? And, okay, so maybe from that response, what did he say? You said crazy outfit? Is that how he described it? So I wonder if he knew that, it's a little outlandish and perhaps, he knows that there's going to be some attention on this, some eyes on him. And he wanted something to kind of stick out a little bit. I mean, that color is not going to blend in anywhere. maybe he did choose it himself. I do like how he talks about how this is a really great honor and it's kind of like a high point in his career. And then he changes it to like a high point of his life.
Yeah.
And so, I had to think about this because it is probably going to be something on the clock if he was selected, right? They're not gonna Cliff, we're gonna have you do it and not pay him for it. The union won't have that at all. We have a very old and strong union, and so I do like the idea they're gonna pay him to do this during work hours and ride a horse and also wear this getup. But
it's going to be on the news. We find that out later on. This was going to be a big publicized event. They had a camera crew ready for this. So for Cliff, this was going to make him slightly famous, at least for a little bit. And objectively, to reenact something of that kind of historical significance, however niche it might be, and I don't even know if that's really the word I'm thinking of, but I think objectively it's a cool achievement. And I don't think this is just weird for Cliff. I think this would be a cool thing for anybody to do, if they got, they were selected for this honor. I think that would be nice. So he's right to be proud. And I think, maybe part of it is he wanted that outfit because that would make him look even more spectacular and get even more eyes, more attention drawn to him. For all we know, the outfit wasn't part of the act. It was just riding the horse. Right. And he decided to make it look like wearing the outfit.
That could be it. I wonder if he decided on the horse himself. I mean, because I don't see that being a safe thing, having the Postal Service saying we're going to have you ride the horse, with no training. And then that kind of brings up to another question I have. You mentioned, we're going to see it on the news a little bit later, because usually if you're going to be on the news or something like that, there's some steps to take. You got to go through the chain of command to make sure that this is, going to be okay. So whoever contacted the news apparently told him that he's an equestrian.
Professional horse rider.
Yeah, right. And so so who told the news that? Did Cliff reach out to the news himself?
Or at some point they were at, if his supervisor or something said, now for this, you have to ride a horse. Is that okay? And he's like, I do that all the time. I'm an award-winning equestrian or something like that. He's like, he's competed in this.
I think I have it. I don't know if this was a thing they did as often as we do now. We have daily stand-ups is what we called, it's just to go over safety stuff, kind of big reports that happened in the last 24 hours that happened in the city. So that way we can kind of learn from other people's mistakes so we can prevent our own kind of deal. Yeah. Maybe at some point this particular office was contacted and said, hey, we could use somebody, maybe somebody that can ride a horse, somebody, whatever. And so they're asking for hey, anybody know how to ride a horse? There goes Cliff raising his hand. I'm an equestrian. That's how he got this job. And now he's, making it sound like he was selected. Right. So that could be it. I think that's more in line with Cliff's character.
Yeah. There's a little beat. It's almost kind of sad, but you pointed out earlier when Cliff is saying that this isn't just the high point of his career. It's maybe one of the greatest experiences of his entire life. And he kind of walks away. Right. And Paul comes over. He's like, why is Cliff dressed like that? And Norm just goes, I forget. He wasn't paying attention.
And I don't want to get too far ahead, but this episode has a lot of great Norm moments as well. Mm-hmm. He mentioned just as Cliff was walking into the bar, you're my friend. I never judged you before and I'm not going to start now. Mm-hmm. Throughout the whole damn episode, Norm is are you guys friends? It's funny and really fun stuff. But Norm's kind of showing his hand a little bit of how he feels about Cliff, I think.
It goes a little bit both ways, too.
It really does.
Rebecca mentions that she's envious that Cliff gets to do this because she loves horses. In fact, when she was younger, she had a pony when she was a little girl, and she would always ride the pony. She would always feed the pony little sugar cubes or candy, or she mentioned Snickers. But sometimes, you know, she would give the horse some sugar cubes or Snickers, and then she would eat a Snickers herself. And then sometimes when she was sad, she would eat all the Snickers and the candy and the sugar before she even got to the stable. And then one day she went, and the guy who ran the stables or whatever told her that she wasn't allowed to ride the horse anymore. And they're like, why? She's like, I had outgrown it. And it's just like this sad thing. And she just kind of like has to excuse herself. As you see, she's just walked herself into this, you know, traumatic memory. And just she's about to start crying. And it's, I'm trying to think where else. This is something in continuity that they have established of her being overweight or something when she was a child, and I can't remember where that dates back to.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. If that's something that we knew already or established, but this whole story, it's funny because it kind of, I was almost kind of like picturing Monica from Friends, like telling the story too, because, you know, she's had that history of being overweight herself when she was younger. So I was just like, and, you know, like the connection with, like, you know, James Burrows, who's directed on both shows, mm-hmm, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so, like, it did make me think of that. But I also, you know, because, like, I was binging it, and, you know, we're talking about 11 seasons, and you forget so many things. And, you know, it's been almost a year and a half since I started watching this show, right? So, again, if you guys, for the listeners, if you missed me on the first time, I didn't grow up watching Cheers. That's why I misspoke and said the Frasiers, and, you know, remember, mm-hmm, that doesn't sound right now. I remember the Cranes. And so many of these episodes, I only saw the one time. That's how, mm-hmm, I found Ryan's podcast. So yeah, there's a ton of stuff that I'm not going to remember off the bat. But so this part, though funny, and it sets up something coming up in a moment, I had a hard time trying to remember if this is like, is this something new? Because then I just kind of felt bad for Rebecca, kind of just being fat shamed the whole episode.
Unless I'm misremembering and they come back to it in a later episode after this. Mm. Maybe this is the first time they do it, but I know this isn't the only time they bring this into her history. And I was thinking that we had already gone over it, but that could just be my memory of an episode that I've seen, you know, 1,000 times, but it's in season 11.
Oh, sure. That happens with rewatch podcasts. Like, I'm going through that with, you know, the Quantum Leap. I'm just like, wait a minute, I gotta remember this detail, and then it not happening. I'm like, well, that must have been in another episode then.
Right.
Yeah.
And then our adversary comes down the stairs, John Allen Hill, with his Sam. And Carla asks if he's there for a hair club for men meeting. And this is a nice thing because we have seen this before, Hill and Carla going back and forth and them having this little thing of just insulting each other a lot. And he says, like, he didn't see her down there. And then he motions as if, like, he just got a whiff of her breath. And he's like, but you do announce your presence. And he's like, pizza for lunch or something like that. I don't remember.
Yeah. He does say pizza. Like, it's funny that you mentioned, like, the whiff of her breath. I took it as her, like, how she smells.
Oh, yeah.
So, but the pizza makes sense because he mentions, like, oh, let me guess what you ate, pizza. Mm-hmm. So could be both.
Like, she asks if he's decided what color to dye his hair for Easter, or to dye his head for
his
Easter.
Head. Yeah.
So the egg, I think. So. John asks her to scuttle under the door for Sam.
That was a great line. That I immediately pictured like a little mouse, and right. I'm assuming that's how he sees her. I just thought that was one of the funniest lines. Mm-hmm. Scuttle under the office door.
Yeah. When Sam comes out to get him, he's like, Sam, we have a problem. And Sam says, and this has come up before, Sam hates the way John pronounces his name. And he's like, how would you like me to pronounce it? He's like, just Sam, and you try it. And he's like, Sam. And he's like, all right, John, what would you say if you were going to order a ham sandwich? And he's like, I don't eat ham.
That's such a great line, too. He's so good right here.
John tells Sam that their dumpsters are full, or his dumpsters are full. And Sam is like, so our dumpsters are full. So what? And John points out, it's like, they're not. They are dumpsters. They're his dumpsters. And he's like, if people in Cheers keep filling them up and there's nowhere else, he's going to put locks on the dumpsters. He's like, if you still can't remember, he's like, I'll do something that your customers will actually notice, or something. He says he'll put he'll put a big poster on them with Sam's face and a bold line struck through that.
Yeah.
And he's like, in fact, I might do that anyway, just for a giggle.
Yeah, and he giggles. I think what you were gonna say was if Sam doesn't stop, that he will have everything emptied in the center of the bar, and if it happens again, he'll do something that they'll notice. Right. So I thought that was great. It's just like your bar is so dirty and filthy that, you know, emptying the trash in the middle of the bar, people aren't going to notice anyway. So I'll just have to do something else that they will notice. So I love the layers of that joke.
And as he's walking away, you know, Carla comes to Sam's defense again. She's like, Sam can do whatever he wants with his trash. Perfect setup, because John goes, yes, I see today he's dressed it up in an apron.
So good. Okay.
You know, Sam is just upset. He wants to do something to get him back. And, you know, he's like, who cares if he puts his stuff in John's dumpsters? And Norm kind of points out, I was like, you know, that those are an expense. You know, those are expensive. You know, that's his stuff. It's generous that he allows Cheers to use them as much as he does anyway. And he's like, the guy is running a business. You kind of have to, you know, understand it from his point of view. And Sam's like, that's a good point, Norm. Speaking of running a business, he takes out his ledger book of Norm's tab. And he's like, what should we do about this? And Norm's like, well, we could throw it away in our dumpsters.
Yeah, that's a great line as well. And it did make me wonder, I feel, didn't Rebecca like clear Norm's tab, or maybe even Sam did at some point not too long ago work that he's done?
Yeah, when Sam got the bar back, he said he wiped his tab or something like that. It's sort of unclear. It's just kind of like the running gag, and it's completely separate from the tally that I continue to take. But yeah, they make the joke even more that, you know, it's an entire notebook, of how many beers Norm owns. Yeah.
I do love Norm's, just a call back to like, our trash, you know, so just, you know, staying in line with Sam. So yeah, it's so well written.
Later on, Woody is carrying a bag of garbage, and he tells Rebecca that he'll put locks on the dumpster. So he did actually carry through with his threat. And she tells Woody to just set the trash down someplace and they'll come up with a solve for it. So Woody sets the garbage right next to Norm at the bar. He just kind of puts it on the stool, just kind of set it aside for a minute. And Norm is just kind of like, hey, can you pass the sports page or something, Cliff? And he's like, Mr. Peterson, that's not Mr. Clavin. That's a bag of garbage. And Norm just kind of pulls him aside to whisper. He's like, maybe if we treated Cliff a little bit nicer, he wouldn't be a sack of garbage or something like that. Like, still not getting it.
And again, this was what I kind of referenced earlier. I was just like, just, you know, they are friends, but Norm doesn't even look over, you know, like he, in his mind, all of a sudden the stench just came out of nowhere. So I was like, oh, of course, like Cliff must have just sat there. That's his seat. There's this, you know, the smell. It must be Cliff. And, you know, I guess maybe not a lot of people think about this, but at the end of a long day, you know, depending, like, you know, if it's hot out, especially, Cliff has been out in the elements, you know, like that does not smell good, right? And so I can see that, you know, like that joke does work for me because I know how I smell at the end of a work shift. And if some of us want to go somewhere like after work, you know, to celebrate something or whatever, often, well, we're not supposed to be like drinking out in public anyway, but, you know, we do have our own cheers, right, you know, which is totally fine. They'll stick us in a corner kind of thing. But a lot of us do bring, you know, change of clothes just because we're going to be smelling bad. We've been sweating and all that stuff. So I do like that joke.
That's interesting. I never even thought about that. I thought of it more as a big lump of something just sitting on the bar stool, sort of as a comparison of both. It could be said about Norm, Cliff, Paul, any of those guys, that they're just sacks just sitting at the end of the stool that don't do anything. They're about as inanimate as a bag of something. So that's kind of what I take. I didn't even think about like the odorous comparison to garbage.
Oh, yeah. It's bad. And some of the vehicles, you know, like there are people sitting in there all day. They, you know, they smell like their vehicle or vice versa. Because I'm around them all the time and at the end of the day, some of them, you just kind of wonder like, is this just how you smell at the end of the day? Or did you not like wash this uniform from the night before? You're wearing the same one. I have questions, you know, so even with like people I work with, and that goes like everywhere too. Like I've worked at several stations, so it's not just like one in particular. It's just, everybody has different levels of hygiene and stuff, but that's just kind of, you know, like, again, that made sense to me that like, I don't know if we've ever had a joke or a reference to like how Cliff might smell like inside the bar. And yeah, so this is like when this happened, I'm like, yeah, no, that's I wouldn't want to sit next to Cliff if I was one of those bar flies, you know, like if he had just gotten off work.
Then Sam is outraged about the dumpsters being locked off and he wants to get back at Hill. But as they point out, he'll never do it. Hill is too evil and too smart for him. So Sam accepts that there's somebody else. There's somebody in this bar that they know who is so full of evil, so full of hate that they can take down John. And Woody's just like, huh? Yeah, I guess I'm kind of busy, Sam, but I guess I could give it a shot. And it's like, but you know what? I think Carla can be pretty mean sometimes. And Sam's like, that's a good idea. We'll ask Carla instead.
It's good framing of it as well, because, you know, we kind of see Woody, you know, closer to the camera, but in the far distance, you see Carla, who's very blurred out. But, you know, you can see like the red shirt she's wearing. Right. So, yeah, you see her in the far back. So that's a really great setup there. But I was trying to see like what Woody was doing, because he says, you know, I'm a little busy right now. And I couldn't see like if he was actually doing anything. I think that joke would have been punched up just a little bit more. But like the misdirect, I picked up on it immediately because I saw Carla in the background. I'm just like, oh, I know where this is going. I did like it, but I was like, I need something a little bit there.
What worked about it for me was this sort of implication that Woody thinks he's a lot darker than everybody else does. Like when he's talking about something, he's like, that's why I'm so cynical. And I was like, like being in Boston for 6 years now has really changed him. It's made him harder and given him this edge. It's like, okay, what do you, we don't see that. But, and so then, yeah, so Sam asks Carla to take all of her cruelty and her meanness out on John. And she's like, you want me to make him cry? And he's like, oh, yeah. And she's about to do that when Rebecca's like, I don't think you can do it. Rebecca's kind of skeptical that she could make him cry. And this is clearly just a setup to pay off the joke, because Rebecca should know better than to walk into this. But Carla's like, say, Rebecca, why did they stop you? Why weren't you allowed to ride that horse anymore when you were a kid? She's like, was it because you got too fat? So fat that you broke the back of a horse? And you just see, as soon as she brings it, something breaks inside of Rebecca and she just has to run away crying. So.
She loved that pony. Yeah, I thought that was... again, like I felt bad, you know, like it's I get what we're doing to me. I just felt that that's a little mean, but, you know, I get what we're doing. And it's Carla. I didn't have too much to add to that.
Later on, the guys are watching TV. Paul finds a paper or something. He's like, it's talking about it's an advertisement, a little poster that. A little flyer of Cliff reenacting this thing. And he's like, why is this here? And Woody is like, it's a flyer that Mr. Clavin asked us to pass around the bar for customers. It's like, why didn't you do it? And he's like, because it's a flyer that Mr. Clavin asked us to pass around to customers. Like, we've had trouble with this before.
I like how we actually get there. Like, Paul was looking for something to wipe his fingers with because he had been eating Cheetos.
Cheetos, yeah.
Yeah, and they had that little discussion like, oh, I hate eating Cheetos because, like, the orange fingers. Or I forget how Norm, said it. I guess we learned that Norm likes to eat Cheetos with, like, a really giant spoon. So
at home, he eats them with a spoon.
Yeah. I think that's kind of like the fun of like eating a Cheetos is to, like, you know, eat or lick off the, you know, the little dust off at the end there. So I don't know if they actually did it, but I believe earlier this year, didn't they announce that they were going to stop using like the dyes or something on the Cheetos? When I saw that, and it could have been fake. I mean, we have AI now. Like, you don't know what's real or not, unfortunately. And so when I saw that, I go, that was kind of the appeal of eating a Cheetos. I don't know why we're getting rid of the orange colors. But anyway, I digress. But yeah, I just love how Paul was like, yeah, he's looking to wipe his hands on something. It just happened to be this flyer, not even a napkin, mind you.
And Paul reads it that Cliff is going to reenact the first mail delivery on the Boston Post Road. And he's like, yeah, it's on TV right now. And he's like, change the channel. But Norm is like, this is a great episode of Barnaby Jones. And then he's like, oh, we can flip back and forth. So they turn on the TV and we get like the news saying that they're waiting for postal carrier Cliff Clavin to arrive. We find out that Cliff is missing. They flick back to Barnaby Jones or something. And the phone rings and Woody answers it, and it's for Norm, but it's Cliff. So we cut away and we see that Cliff is now on a horse, but in the middle of a busy Boston street. And he's like, where are you? He's like, I'm somewhere in the combat zone. Still in his colonial outfit. Now, the combat zone, and I think I mentioned this, was formerly kind of the affectionate name for an area down in Boston that was a lot of like nightclubs, exotic dance clubs, burlesque houses and stuff like that. But yeah, and they make a joke about this later. It's just like strip club after strip club after strip club, like the whole street about this. Yeah, I only kind of bring this up because one of the last times I was in Boston, God, now this was about 10 years ago, but I actually stayed at a hostel in this neighborhood, but it's no longer, I'll say it's no longer as fun as it used to be. they changed up some of the businesses.
Wow, okay.
But yeah, it's like right on the border of Chinatown and kind of what's now like the theater district sort of in between them.
Yeah, a lot going on here. Like Paul was saying, like, oh, you're like, it's on now, you know, and Norm doesn't even want to change the channel. Like you said, Barnaby Jones. Now, I'm not familiar with this Barnaby Jones. This is
I've never seen TV it. Yeah.
So I have a friend who's like a username on somewhere on social media is Barnaby Jones. And I had no idea where he got that. So sounds like it was a show. So Norm wasn't even like excited for Cliff, I guess, to like, you know, change the channel. But they changed the channel. And then the person on the news, the way he says, and as we understand it, he's an equestrian. So someone tells him, and even they're confused about the whole thing. So I love that bit too.
Part of this is compounded because of the fact that Ratzenberger is directing this episode. So he's directing himself up on top of this horse and trying to like speak into a payphone, trying to get Norm's attention. And then it cuts back far enough that we get a shot of the horse just taking off and running, and Cliff, a stuntman, but Cliff just basically being kind of like flung on the back of this horse, being carried off and everything without being able to control it.
You know, and kind of mentioned earlier, I could have used a little ADR as he, you know, as the horse is taken off with Cliff kind of hanging on for dear life, could have been like, get out of the way, we're all gonna die. You know, like give us, you know, a callback. That would have been a little cherry on top. Yeah, because since there was no, I was expecting like a scream or something. Mm-hmm. And the way he rides off, I was like, oh, you know, just because I was waiting for something, it didn't come. But yeah. It's still a funny visual nonetheless.
So Norm is like, oh, all right. And Norm kind of begrudgingly gets up to go look for his friend. he's really disappointed though, because this is a good episode of Barnaby Jones. And he's like, I don't know if I've ever seen the end of this one. And Phil kind of pops up. He's like, the jewels are in the dog's collar. And Norm's just like, oh, thanks, Phil.
Yeah, and we haven't seen Phil like all episode, right? Yeah, like we saw Paul. Paul at least, I guess maybe just a one time. But then, yeah, just cut to Phil in the back there. Who has seen the episode? Mm-hmm. So always nice to see Rhea's father there.
Carla comes rushing down the stairs. They mentioned that she'd been up there for a while, and she kind of lashes out at Rebecca and Woody and heads to the women's room, and Rebecca follows her, and Lilith is already in there, and Rebecca's like, what is going on? And Lilith is just like, in this bar, I don't ask. And Carla is just so hot that she's like ripping the soap dispenser off of the wall. And it's like trying to rip the hand to the towel dispenser off. And Lilith is like, you're obviously upset. And she's just like punching and thrashing things. And Lilith is like, or maybe not. I don't know you that well.
Well, I also like, you know, as she was, because Woody was kind of in the way too. And she calls him some nasty things. And then there's that beat. And then Woody's like, boy, I hate to be on the receiving end of that. And I'm like, see, another one of those things that just went over his head, because it's like, well, you kind of were. But I guess, you know, since, you know, the 6 years in Boston made him so hard that it just bounced right off.
They're like, what happened? Like, what happened when you were upstairs with Hill? And she didn't want to talk about it. She's like, but she mentions that she kind of lost control. They're like, did you break something expensive? And she's like, no. Did you hurt him? And she's like, no, I didn't hurt him. Like, did he have a heart attack? Is he dead up there? She goes, no, I didn't hurt him. I slept with him. And then they're like, whoa. And as this whole scene is kind of playing out, I like the I don't know if that we've had a scene with these three characters alone. Like, there was an episode a few seasons ago with, like, Carla's birthday party. They did their whole little girls group. But I don't know that we've had these three, like, in a room in this kind of condition. It's like...
Yeah, you may be right. I was actually surprised to even find Lilith in there, because like I forgot, like, oh, well, she was in the opener.
Yeah.
And then did we not see her until just now? And so
I think so, yeah.
But you're right. Yeah. And it's nice to, you know, to kind of get like, you know, because of Lilith's line of work, you know, it's nice to have her kind of like talk Carla through this. And oh, yeah, this is not uncommon necessarily. You know, it is actually a bit of a phenomenon. So I love how like Carla's going for everything and then they even stop her when she tries to grab for the scene.
they hold her back and she's trying to rip the thing off the wall. And she's like, I don't know what happened. She went up there and started calling him bald and wrinkly. He started calling her short and ugly. She's like, the next thing when our clothes were off and we're insulting each other against the filing cabinet.
This obviously threw me off when we find out that, you know, that she slept with him because they're, you know, like Lilith and Rebecca is like, oh, did you break something expensive and all these things? And so like, I didn't see that coming. And I guess because she comes down and she's still dressed exactly the same way, you know, but she does mention like, you know, next thing she knows that their clothes are off. And so I could have used a little like maybe her shirt was unbuttoned down a little bit more, or her hair frizzled, like something. But I think, you know, like I think the shock factor is a little bit higher to, you know, like if you don't suspect it. Right. And then she says, yeah, that we slept together, but I did not see that coming. It is a great scene. And obviously, like, we know how much she loves Sam and like, she does really feel that she let him down. So I do like this moment, you know, like it almost takes me out of everything. And I kind of forget the stuff going on with Cliff and stuff like that. And then we kind of center in on Carla here.
There's also nice little, it's a bit of telling or maybe foreshadowing the fact that as bad as she feels, the sort of self-loathing that she has and the feeling of betraying Sam that we'll kind of come to later on. Part of her obviously likes this or liked it and enjoyed it because of the fact she gives him a little nickname so quickly after it. But then like when Lilith is saying, you know, she diagnoses this an attraction repulsion relationship and you're basically so filled up with any all negative emotions that they have to spill out to some kind of emotional release, whatever it may be. And Carla's like almost like with a sense of wonder. She's like, plus the guy's practically a contortionist. It's like, okay, like she can't help herself, but have she had a good time with this?
I mean, aside from the age difference, I mean, it's probably not too dissimilar from her relationship with Nick, right? I mean,
yeah,
it's,
really,
you know, toxic, you know, just right. The verbal Absolutely, abuse yeah. and all that. She's yeah. probably snapping back into like, oh, this is all very mm-hmm. familiar. And yeah. what's the thing we do next after, you know, lashing out on each other?
There's a great little subtle moment where she goes to wash her hands. And at this point, she's already ripped the like hand towel dispenser off and thrown it in the garbage can. So she picks it up out of the garbage can, takes the towel out, and puts it back in the garbage can to dry her hands. I was like, it's like she's doing it. It's almost unconsciously while she's like talking about how she feels bad about betraying Sam and she doesn't want Sam to find out. And they're like, well, he's going to find out. She's like, then let her be the one to tell him the truth that night. Like, you know, so he doesn't get surprised by it.
That was such a great physical bit right there. Yeah, she picks it back out of the trash. Lilith and like Rebecca, we don't even see their reaction. Almost kind of like, oh, you're just going to put it back in the trash after you grab the towel because that's all you needed.
So Norm comes back. He hasn't found Cliff yet. He's been like going to all the hospitals, but he's like he did find like a donut shop or something because he throws like a donut on the bar top. And he says he's going to call the hospital and he calls like, you know, he's on the phone with like Mass General or something. And Paul's like, hey, I got some major dish. And he's like, and he's just on with the hospital. He's like, keep doing your good work or something. And he hangs up on it. And that's Paul mentions that Carla slept with John Allen Hill. Like apparently this is already going around the bar. And Fraser is walking by. Norm's like, did you hear about Paul, Carla and Hill? And he's like, yeah, who do you think told Paul? And it's like everybody else, like the other barflies, like Phil and Pete, the other guy in the background, they're talking about how like they predicted it, they saw it coming or something like that. And but of course, Woody doesn't know what people are talking about. And Fraser tries to tip him off, you know, subtly trying to make it clear that Colin Hill had sex and Woody isn't able to get it through the use of euphemisms. So Fraser has to just blur out. He's like, sex, Carla and John Owen Hill had sex. And Sam overhears him say that because everybody could because Fraser's practically shouting it. And that's when Sam looks at Carla and she goes running back into the bathroom. And Sam...
I do love how, because Lilith, you know, she mentions to Fraser like, oh, you know, like this, that was, you know, something private that was supposed to be between her, you know, and Carla, and then Frasier has like the most Frasier line ever. It's like, well, does she like pay you even a penny or something like that, right? And she's like, yeah, well, no. Yeah. It's like, well, yeah. And so, yeah, fair, you know, it's fair game. Like, you shouldn't pay you, so that was like a professional, like, right, you know, a consultation or whatever. Yeah,
right. Like that. Well, it's like, I told you that in confidence. It's like, it wasn't doctor-patient confidence. It's like, she didn't pay you. You're not, she's not your client. It's like, you have no, no obligation to keep a secret. And then when she's complaining to the guys, he's like, you may have, your gossiping may have caused a rift between Sam and Carla. And Frasier's like, you blabbed first.
Yes, that's true too. Yeah, she, but you know, it's like, you know, it's pillow talk with their husband and wife. And I get where she's coming from too. Like, he should understand you're also a doctor. So
in the women's bathroom again, Carla is apologizing to Sam, and he's kind of like listening to this as it's kind of washing over him. And then he kind of gives her the, basically the appointment, the sort of motherly, I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed type of thing. But he's like, you know, yeah, the way I see it, you let the team down. It goes with a baseball analogy. He's like, it's like, you know, bases loaded, two outs or something, man on first, the coach tells you to bunt, team expects you to bunt, the opposing team expects you to bunt, the pitcher expects you to bunt. But instead of bunting, you sleep with John Allen Hill. And he kind of like loses it and freaks out. And you're expecting him to start throwing things off the wall. And she's like defending herself, shouting back. And she's like, you have no right to judge me. I never judged you for any of the women that you went with. He's like, what about Diane? He's like, I never said anything about Diane. He's like, you wanted to kill her. She's like, no, I disapproved.
There was a line that he's like, you put a, like every day you put a grenade in her mouth and pull the pin or something like that. This is like the funniest scene in the episode, from like, doesn't Sam like aggressively like steps into the stall and slams the door, or maybe like he swings the door wide open. A lot going on in there. And I just love, like, you were talking about how like the baseball analogies, and so like that's where he stops and goes, and then you go sleep with, you know, John Allen. That was really funny.
And she isn't gonna listen to this anymore, and she kind of storms off, and Sam is just in the bathroom fuming and hurt and confused. And when he kind of comes in, he's like, I understand you're confused. I made the mistake myself. He's like, but remember, the men's room is the second door on the left.
That was played so well too. Like, I like a lot of the stuff that they give Woody to do here. And like, Sam's almost having a moment like, oh, okay, you know, like Woody's here. He's, diffusing the situation, and Carla's already exited the scene. And yeah, it's like everything that Woody says, like, yeah, you know, I've been through this. Like, I get, you know, what you're going through. And Sam's almost like, oh, I have somebody that understands me. Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, you know, next time, you know, the men's room's the second door, you know? So yeah, I love that punchline there.
We come back, we get a capper on this one. Cliff returns to the bar. Now in his civilian clothes, he managed to deliver the mail, even though it was 3 hours late. But he points out the original was like 3 weeks late, so he still made good time by their standards.
That's a great joke, and I know that it's very easy and fun to poke at the post office about, you know, snail mail and junk mail and all this stuff. Which, by the way, I did read as somewhere that, like, in the 70s, I think it was, you know, another, I don't want to name drop some of the other competitors, but they came up with the whole idea of junk mail to get people to go to them instead of the USPS. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I like the idea of it being slower, but I'm thinking back in the day, did they have expectations on like when something will arrive? Because as a mail carrier, like, I'm picking apart all these things, right? Nice. Like, I see mailboxes like everywhere, like in TV shows and movies. Like, it just, I center in on it. I just have that radar. But yeah, this one, I thought it was funny. I was like, yeah, that is actually a big feat, you know, between 3 hours late to 3 weeks late. I can see, you know, why he's, that made him happy, because like, anytime I deliver a package and somebody's like, oh, I was expecting this tomorrow. I'm like, great. We were a day early. That's awesome. Yeah. Because, you know, what's the alternative? Like, oh, you guys were like 2 days late, you know?
I would be curious, actually, like, when did giving customers tracking numbers become like the norm, become like a regular practice? Because I would think, like, as long as they've had those, it would have to be like, it, like at this time in the 90s, if they were able, if they had those numbers to track the package between destinations, it would have to be upon like request. You would have to be able to like describe the package or what you were expecting, unless they, I don't think track numbers were always on the receipt every time you dropped something off at the post office. So
no, and we actually were not only late, but I believe the last to get the real-time GPS. You know, because before, you know, when we would scan things, I started in 2007. So kind of give you guys a frame of reference here. And before our scanners, we would scan, you know, and then select delivered, you know, parcel locker, whatever, you know, we're putting the package. That information doesn't get uploaded into the system until we come back at the end of the day and dock our scanners. So then you wouldn't even see that, you probably would have, you know, if you were home, you would have gotten your item already, but then you wouldn't see that we had delivered to you at like 9 a.m. until, you know, 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the evening. So we were very slow to get that real time information. And even when we first got it, we had to have like these old flip phones that we had to connect to our scanner to even upload it. So we went through like a few different phases of different scanners, and now we're, now we have the real time. So we were behind on that for a while. UPS, FedEx, all of them had the real time stuff. So, but yeah, the tracking numbers, I don't know when that started, but I can't imagine in 91. I'm guessing those were probably not available just yet. Because, a lot of changes were still happening. I mean, we didn't even have the machines that sorted the mail for us. But like, people would spend, you know, half their shift still sorting mail themselves before they hit the street to deliver it. So a lot has changed. Just trying to stay competitive. I mean, being one of the biggest countries in the country, one of the biggest companies in the country, we were very slow and still kind of slow with our technology to get to where it needs to be.
So Cliff notices that Norm is gone. They're like, well, he went looking for you. And Cliff's feeling bad. He's like, all right, well, I guess I should go back out there and retrace my steps and look for him. But there's a great TV show on or whatever. And he's like, hey, he sits down. He's like, Norm's a big guy. He can take care of himself. And this is where we cut back to the street as Norm is walking around looking for Cliff. And we just hear this barker on the street corner just going, naked, naked, naked. Just calling out, trying to get people into the club. And Norm approaches the guy. He's like, I'm looking for a guy wearing a funny costume with a horse. And the guy just kind of like puts a cigarette. He's like, try the place 2 doors down. And then when Norm's like, thanks him and walks away, he's like, what a freak. It's like,
it's a great line. It's funny. And it's kind of funny to think that gentleman, you know, do I call him that? I don't know. Thinks that Norm's a freak, but, needs context. But that was a funny bit too.
And then we get to our final scene. Sam rings Carla's doorbell. She lets him inside and he's like, where are the kids? She's like, how should I know? It's only 1:30. It's like middle. And Sam came to apologize. He actually brings her like an olive branch. They forgive each other. They love each other. And he won't let Hill come between them because they're best friends. And they have a nice little tender hug. And she's like, yeah, it was just one of those things. And Sam's like, you know, tomorrow I'll go to Hill and I'll calmly ask if he can use the dumpsters until he can buy his own. He's like, I'll do it bright and early. And we just hear John's voice coming from down the hall. And Carla's like, it's like, not too early, Sam. As he comes out wearing a bathrobe that only comes to like John's mid-thigh. And he's like, I have a feeling I'll be in a little bit late tomorrow. And he's holding a toothbrush too. And Carla's like, okay, it was just, you know, two of those little things.
This is a great ending. We had a great opener, so not necessarily a book end, but I love how funny this moment is. Ryan, you know, I'm a male character. This is why I'm on this episode, and so I feel, you know, it'd be fun to insert, you know, my little knowledge here of the Postal Service with my time in service. Now, Carla does have a mailbox right outside her front door. Don't know if you picked up on that, but I saw it immediately. My eyes are trained. Like when I am walking, you know, and I train people, like new people, I tell them, you know, as you're walking up to the house, you know, first thing is start looking for the house number. Is this the right house? You know, if it's not, continue on. And then the next thing is, you know, look for that mailbox. So that way you know the direction you're going to. It could be on the side of the house, could be on the fence, it could be anywhere. So this is right by the front door. So that tells me that her house is on a walking route, or at least mm-hmm. that block is a walking route. Yeah. Now, the right-hand vehicles, I don't believe were introduced until the late 90s. So I believe, and, you know, listener, correct me if I'm wrong, for the anybody that does know, I believe in the early 90s, they were probably driving the Jeeps, which I believe were left-hand drives, not right. And so even if you had like curbside delivery, I've heard stories of people saying like back in the day, they would drive like in the wrong direction. So that way they can service those curbside boxes. Mm. So that's why they had to, yeah, kind of redevelop the vehicles into the right-hand drive. So just that a little insight there. So there's a chance that Carla does know her mail carrier because of how often he would come to, he or she, you know, comes to the door.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. We do know that her house is right next to the airport or an airfield, a cargo airfield.
Right.
Yeah.
Is this the same living room? I feel like it's been a while since we've seen.
Yeah.
Her house. Okay. It looked a little different to me. Maybe they just added more toys or something.
It could be that they've redressed it. But yeah, we were just here for the episode. I just happened the Unplanned Parenthood episode when Sam and Rebecca have to take care of Carla's kids for the episode.
Right.
Yeah, they're, but anyway, so fun episode. It still goes by. It doesn't. Well, I guess sort of what I remember about this most is this hookup between John and Carla. This isn't a one-off. This does come back in later episodes.
Oh, okay.
At least two other episodes. It's kind of a relationship that keeps going forward.
Okay. So
we'll see a little bit of more of that.
Yeah, I haven't. I had seen this episode prior, so I haven't gotten there yet. I need to figure out. I haven't. I'm a little behind. Mm-hmm. Is a funny word to say for like a show that's been out for a few decades.
Yeah.
But I have not yet completed my binge, so I haven't completed the series just yet. I'm obviously still listening to your episodes, but yeah, I have not seen the second time they've hooked up yet. So that I think that probably gives me an idea of where I might be to kind of catch up again. I think I'm still in season 10.
I don't think it comes back until season 11.
Okay, so I'm probably like towards the end of season 10, probably somewhere.
Right.
That's a good thing about the streaming services. Like you can see where you kind of left off. That's the other thing too. But sometimes if you're on like multiple devices or TVs, it only stays on that device. You know, so it's like, oh, well, if I watch episode 3 on my phone, it may not show that on the TV and it might show me that I'm behind or something. I don't know, but... Yeah, I need to catch up so that way I can catch up on the episodes in the event I make a return.
Yeah, of course. Norm had 6 beers this episode, which brings him up to 983 beers, and he still has a credit of 372. So, who did you think was the MVP for this one?
I have to give it to John Allen Hill. He has. You know, the kids, they call it sick burns or, you know, something like that. And he had a lot of zingers. There were really great stuff. The scuttle under the office door, all that stuff with Carla pretty early on. And then the Sam, I don't eat ham. And the line about dumping the garbage in the middle of the bar and doing something, you know, that they would actually notice. He had a lot of great stuff here. I'm going to have to give it to him.
I'm glad I had in my notes, I had either Carla or Hill. So I'll split the difference. If you pick John, I'll pick Carla. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's a great thing. We get there, her swing of emotions from, you know, just like being this sort of vindictive and cruel to just kind of her self-loathing, the way she's ripping the stuff off the walls in the bathroom. To when she kind of has to stand up and defend herself against Sam. Yeah, it was fun. I thought she did a good job handling this one. So for the home run, you mentioned it, but I think my favorite line in this one is, I don't eat ham.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
I think that's my favorite like line, but I think that would be my home run, but a very close runner-up would just be not for a line, but the spectacle of Cliff on the horse. Like everything from the costume to the setting of him being around these strip clubs, just wearing this horse, and then when it rides off with him on its back.
For my kind of like my home run, it's got to be John showing up at Carla's place. Because I remember when I first saw this episode, and I was a little, I don't know how I want to describe my like what I was feeling, but like, so the scene in the ladies' room with Lilith and Rebecca, and Carla is explaining everything that happened. I'm like, oh man, I could have used a little something. Maybe we could have had like a really brief moment of that interaction, but not see anything, right? Like we could see them really get into each other's face and taking turns saying really mean things to each other and just cut away from that. And so I do remember kind of like feeling that way and thinking like, oh, that would have been nice to see. But the shock, like I remember the shock feeling that I had once John came around that corner wearing the robe. And I don't want to mention this earlier because I wanted to talk about this moment, but in the ladies' room, Carla says something like, she mentions like his wiry bantam legs. And so when John comes around the corner, the way he stands and crosses his legs, it draws attention, and it's his bare legs nonetheless, right? And so I think that's the moment for me because of the shock value and that great setup where they gave us nothing, you know, because now we're like left to like visualize it ourselves. Then they give us this visual at the end. And I thought it was great.
The wiry bantam legs. I love that. That was so funny. Oh, Peter, thank you very much for coming back on Cheers Cast and being on this episode with me. This was a blast to talk about. Where else can our listeners find you if they want to hear more from you?
Well, thanks again for having me back. Enjoy being on the show. Enjoy listening to your your rewatch reviews and breakdowns. It's always fun to listen to. It is a really truly a great companion piece to the show if that's a thing that you're into. Hopefully, I didn't bore people with something like the postal cock and history adjacent here. But yes, you introduced me as you know one of the hosts of the Quantum Leap podcast. We're almost halfway through season two. And what makes us a little bit different is we are kind of like the third group of voice like hosts on this podcast that has been around for 13 years, and they've had interviews with everybody, including the creator and co-creator Donald P. Bellisario and Deborah Pratt. Mm-hmm. And so we're going through the rewatches now. My co-host is the only one that has not seen the show, so he's coming in blind, and that's nice. What does separate us from everyone else has done rewatches, but they, you know, usually the two or three hosts, they've all seen the show, so it's nice to hear, like, you know, whether something stands up and all that all stuff, right. So you can find us basically just type in the Quantum Leap podcast. I do believe we show up as a top result kind of everywhere, especially social media. I do run that account for the most part. And I will be relaunching towards the end of this year my Cobra Kai podcast, Cobra Kai Companion, as a rewatch as well. There's been a little bit of time since that show has ended, but since I'm still pretty heavy in the community and have a good pulse, I can feel that people are kind of they're waiting for like spinoff news, which has not come. Yeah. And there's all these other shows like getting spinoffs, and we're like, we need something Cobra Kai. So I'm doing that, but also there is a documentary about its fans and how like the show has impacted the fans, which I will be a part of. And mm-hmm. So like I thought like relaunching the podcast would, you know, kind of create some buzz around the show again, and it would be a good chance to kind of promote that documentary when it drops. So you can find me in both places. Like I've interviewed the creators, you know, after every season they came on the show to talk. And so I've had interviews with Ralph Macchio, William Zabka, you know, the leads of the show. So I've interviewed everybody over there too. So those are the two main podcasts that you can find me at.
Very cool. Very cool. Check those out, folks. And thanks again, Peter. And thanks to all of you who listen to CheersCast and support the show by liking and sharing on social media and leaving comments on the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon. CheersCast is supported by the Right On Network and Jeff and Rick Presents Unpacking the Power of Power Pack. Go to patreon.com/FWpodcast to support your favorite show on the Fire and Water Network. Thanks everyone for listening, and until next time, we're closed.
Sammy, I let you down. I slept with the enemy. Please forgive me. Please don't be angry.
No, I'm not angry. It's just, well, the way I see it, you let down the whole team. It's like, you know, bottom of the ninth. One out, runner on first. You're up at bat. Coach tells you to bunt. Team expects you to bunt. The runner on first expects you to bunt. Fans expect you to bunt. But instead of bunting, you sleep with John Allen Hill!
Take it easy. You're supposed to forgive me.
How can I forgive you? You slept with that evil little dwarf.